everybody, and thank you for joining me here on this Tuesday, December 19th edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next hour or so, as we go over all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Happy to have you with me for the Tuesday edition of the show here. Two guests will join me. The first, Brian Blessing from Sportsbook Radio. We heard from him last week for the first time here on Bang the Book Radio. We'll bring him back this week, but we will chat some NFL here with him. Last week, we talked hockey. Still some shelf life to that segment if you missed that one, so go back and check that out. But we'll look at week 16. We'll handicap motivation in the NFL a little bit. Look at a few games here coming up this weekend. Bunch of good stuff coming your way in that segment with Brian. Second half of today's show, Philip Rosenreich from OrlandoMagicDaily.com will join me. We'll chat NBA with him. We'll look at some of the interesting scheduling spots here this week with the league-wide off day coming up here on Sunday. And then, of course, the big marquee games coming up on Monday. But lots of teams playing three games in four nights, 4 and 6. 5 and 7. So we'll talk about the teams that have the depth to deal with those types of situations, and then also talk about some less heralded star players. We obviously know guys like LeBron, Russ, Durant, Curry, you know, Kawhi Leonard, those types of guys. But who are some of those second tier guys that have a really big impact on the games and possibly should have a bigger impact on the lines? We'll talk about that with Philip Rosenreich here in the second half of today's show. We'll go ahead and bring on today's first guest. That is Mr. Brian Blessing from Sportsbook Radio out in Las Vegas. Brian, how's it going today, man?
Hello, Adam. How you doing, sir?
I'm doing well. Hope you're having a good day out there in what I assume is sunny and beautiful Las Vegas. And let's go ahead and talk some NFL here for Week 16. Now, one of the things that stands out to me here about this week, Brian, and maybe this has something to do with the overall outlook of the league and the timing of the season, no games below 3.5-point favorites here. Really not something we're used to seeing in the NFL.
No, it's bizarre. And the favorites actually, you know, won last week pretty much every game. Straight up, the favorites got the job done, not necessarily covering the number. But you look at some of these scenarios where you're scoreboard watching, and the most simplistic thing is do what you do, take care of yourself. But it may not be quite that simple, because there are teams and they're ridiculous Rubik's Cube combinations out there that some teams need to get in, but we've seen stranger things when we get to week 17.
Yeah, and there are a lot of different scenarios here, of course, over the final 2 weeks, and we won't bore you with those here on the show. We will talk about them where they're relevant, of course, if they could be betting angles, but lots of different dominoes to fall here in terms of seeding, and then, of course, the fights in the bottom of the conferences there for, you know, the 5 and 6 seeds, and then you could also even extend that to the teams that have nothing to play for, the teams that are trying to improve their draft positioning a little bit. But, Brian, you mentioned the favorites doing so well last week, and this has been a trend here basically over the last 6 or 7 weeks, I think it is. Favorites are just hammering it this year. That's not really something that we're used to. I mean, a lot of times guys with a sharper mindset like to look for those underdogs, specifically those ugly ones. It's been all chalk this year, it feels like.
Well, I think it's pretty apparent the disparity between the good teams and the bad teams is pretty high. If you want to talk about the quality of the product, maybe that's kind of where it rears its head. You know, you do go to the bottom now. You see San Fran at 4-10, but this is not a 4-10 football team with Garoppolo running the show.
No, it's true. And I mean, it's a quarterback-driven league. We kind of talk about that a lot here. And, you know, now San Francisco has that guy. They've got that quarterback. And, of course, we'll see if some of those teams with the high draft picks wind up going the quarterback route here in the NFL draft. But Brian, let's handicap motivation a little bit here in week 16. Obviously next week is a completely different animal depending on what all has been decided in the playoff picture. But as far as week 16 goes, I think there are two very different schools of thought. Some people will say, well, all these guys are professionals. They're all going to show up and play. Others are going to say, you know, teams that have a lot of injuries, you know, or a lot of key players have been hurt, they just may not show up this week. How do you tend to approach it here in week 16?
Well, I mean, it pretty much as every week. I mean, you look at New England the week before playing Pittsburgh. You know, they lose to Miami. You're going to have potentially letdowns from New England and maybe even Pittsburgh this week after that crazy game and finish. Even though they're professionals, you think they're less likely prone to deal with those kind of things, less than college kids would. It still happens. It's just the nature of the beast. I mean, listen, Derek Carr running into the end zone. You know, they all know, don't extend the ball. You know, it's like it's like the low-hanging fruit. You're running, and you go, you know you shouldn't do it, and then that reaction just comes, oh, the pylon's right there, and he gets hit and fumbles it out of the end zone. So, you know, goofy things happen, even to professionals.
Well, like I said, some teams here kind of looking for, you know, improved draft positioning. I mean, the Giants are a team, obviously, that, you know, looking to grab that number two pick that's out there. Indianapolis, it certainly doesn't benefit them to go out there and find a way to upset Baltimore. Now, clearly, they're probably not going to do that as a two-touchdown dog. But, you know, there are some of these teams here where there is incentive to lose. Now, that being said, it's incentive from a front office standpoint. The players aren't necessarily thinking about that. So, you know, are some of these spreads inflated a little bit too much this week?
Well, I think it's been about 2 years now. Last year was the first year I ever noticed the NFL numbers week to week being so volatile based on the previous result. You know, you never saw those kind of adjustments. And I can tell you this, if not the odds makers making those kind of adjustments, it's the market.
Well, and let's talk about that for a second here. You know, the market is realizing that favorites are the way to go this year. I mean, they've been realizing that for the last several weeks. So, you know, maybe there is a little bit of shading being done out there by the odds makers and by the sports books just based on the action that they're expecting. And, you know, you certainly can't blame them for that. When you look around here this week, I mean, you got Indianapolis catching two touchdowns. Tampa Bay is getting double digits. Miami is getting double digits. Buffalo, in a game that we'll talk about a little bit later here, getting double digits. Houston getting double digits. You know, Indianapolis has nothing to play for. Tampa Bay, nothing to play for. Miami, not really a whole lot to play for. Buffalo has a lot to play for, as we'll discuss in a few minutes. Houston, not a whole lot to play for. So you start looking at those pride angles. You know, how many of these teams have those character guys that are going to step up? How many of those teams have, you know, guys that are playing for jobs? And then maybe in the case of a Tampa Bay, I think they kind of stand out the most among those double-digit teams. You know, what happens with the coaching situation down there? Does Dirk Cutter get fired? Does the team rally for him? Because we saw, you know, the Marvin Lewis announcement last week. You'd figure Cincinnati would do something for the guy, and they just looked lifeless. So do you factor coaching into it a lot here at this time of the year?
Oh, sure. I mean, Cincinnati clearly ran for the bus. And, you know, we'll see what they do in the last couple of weeks. And actually, they could have a massive impact on the playoff picture in the last game of the year when they play Baltimore. You'll see if they rally around that. I would tell you this, of the team you mentioned, I do think Indy has played really hard all year long.
Indy has played hard all year long, and that's one of those things, I think, where they like Chuck Pagano. You know, you have some spots where teams just like the head coach. Arizona will go to battle for Bruce Arians, it seems like, every single year when there are some whispers about his job. So, you know, you just kind of have to get a little bit of a feel for the market. You know, obviously guys like Adam Gase and Bill O'Brien, are very safe here at this time of the year. What about, you know, a situation in Chicago? I know I didn't list this game specifically, but it seems like, by all accounts, John Fox is probably on his way out. If the players don't like him, they can kind of seal the deal by giving the Browns their first win of the season. Is that something you feel like NFL players can fall into the trap of, or, you know, are they just going to go out there and play and let the chips fall where they may?
I wouldn't rule it out, but I think the reality of it is that, you know, when a coach is going to go, it's like any business. If a new general manager comes in, he's going to bring his own people with him. So, you know, be careful what you're wishing for. These guys, those two games are going to be on tape somewhere. You know, and if you're sitting there rolling over and laying down, best of luck to you signing a nice contract if your contract's up or someone that really even wants you.
Well, I think what's really interesting about it and what's really interesting about all the sports betting markets in general is the way that, you know, mainstream media can have a bit of an influence here based on the narratives that they're discussing, the talking points that they've got going on. And I sort of feel like some of that bias really creeps into the market here because that's what's going to happen. ESPN knows Chicago's a big television market. Everybody knows that. So on all of the NFL-related shows, SportsCenter and NFL Live and all the things that they have like that, they'll talk about John Fox. They'll talk about that job security. They'll speculate on things like that. And then it's up to the bettors to decide, you know, if these guys are just, you know, blowing hot air or if there's actually something to it. So, you know, that's one thing I would caution our listeners against here is, and it's the same every week, but especially here at this time of the year with so much speculation, to just, you know, weed out the stuff that makes sense from the stuff that doesn't.
Well, absolutely. And I will tell you, and it was no guarantee, you know, that it was going to, you know, play out that way. but one of the worst numbers I've seen in a millennium was last week. All week long, San Diego's a 2-point favorite. At Chargers, were a 2-point favorite at Kansas City at Arrowhead. It's one of the toughest places to play in the league. And, yeah, okay, the Chargers, they're on a nice run, and the banana peel was out for Kansas City, but Kansas City was coming off a decent effort. They had all these weapons with Hunt in the running game, Kelce and Hill with the passing game. And, you know, are you kidding me? How were they favored? Kansas City should have been a 3-point favorite in that game. That's ridiculous. It's like, that's what I'm saying. The volatility of the market week to week, you're just, sometimes you sit there and you scratch your head.
No, no doubt. And I mean, Kansas City, especially Arrowhead on a Saturday night in a division game, that's easily worth the full three in the NFL, maybe a little bit more. You're going to tell me the Chargers are, yeah, you're going to tell me the Chargers are a 5-point favorite on a neutral field in that game at a minimum? I don't think so.
Yeah, I know. So I'm saying, so yeah, listen to all the bluster, and you can listen to knuckleheads like me, or, you know, but I'm saying at the end of the day, sometimes it's keep it simple, stupid. You know, I mean, it's as obvious as the nose on your face sometimes to not overthink things. You know, I think the more you sit there, the more you stare at something, you can make a case for anything. You know, sometimes first impressions, to me, your first impression should be lasting.
Well, and then you look at the Chargers this week here. They're laying 6.5 with extra juice or 7 all the way out in the Meadowlands against the Jets. Cross-country trip in week 16. You know, against a Jets team that didn't roll over last week against the Saints. They actually played fairly well in that game. I don't understand the perception of the Chargers here in the marketplace.
You watched that Jets game last week with New Orleans. How could they be catching a touchdown in this game? It's unbelievable. Well, now, you know, does that mean the Chargers can't go in there and win by 17? Sure. I don't get it. I mean, they're all the generic angles, traveling cross-country. Oh, yeah, Chargers are motivated. Jets aren't motivated. But you watch them play at New Orleans, where New Orleans, what did they close, 16-point favorites? And believe me, they took the Saints to the mat. That game was in doubt in the fourth quarter.
Well, let's talk about the Saints here. The shops that have opened out there in the marketplace, and there are several of them now at this point coming out of the Monday night game, New Orleans a 5.5-point favorite here against Atlanta. Of course, these two teams just played on Thursday night a couple of weeks ago, and Atlanta was able to come away with the victory there in that one. So for Atlanta here, I mean, they did what they needed to do last night. It wasn't pretty, but it didn't really matter. They're not out there for style points because this isn't college football and this isn't the college football playoff. But what do you think about this rematch here so close together when these two teams just played a couple of weeks ago?
I will tell you that this number absolutely mirrors what we just saw a couple of weeks ago. Forever and a day, kind of like the what I'm going to say, and that's forever. Baltimore and Pittsburgh, the home team, you hang the game 3, and the game fell 3, one way or the other. The home team or the road team would win by 3. Well, a few weeks back, there's Pittsburgh 5.5 against Baltimore. And, you know, it's a game that goes right to the wire, and I think this is the exact same thing. When these two teams play, it generally is, who has the football last wins? And, you know, I think that's an inflated number. And the Saints have had this wonderful season, and, yeah, they run the football, and they haven't needed Breeze to sling it all over the place, and their defense is really good. But you've got to give Atlanta some points for having done this before. They won out in December last year. Atlanta sitting here, went out in December. You control your own destiny, and they're rolling again. There's a team went to the Super Bowl last year. Now, you watch that game against Tampa Bay last night. Ryan makes some great plays, and then he misses a ton of open guys. I mean, so they kind of let Tampa Bay hang around in that game last night. But I just think it's an inflated number. Personally, you know, I think like 3.5. But points look attractive to me in that spot. It's just the nature of the beast with those two.
See, what's so interesting is you look at Atlanta last night, and it was not a good spot for Atlanta. That Tampa Bay game sandwiched between the New Orleans games, you know, they had to win that game. They didn't have to do it by a touchdown or more to cover the number. They just had to go out there, find a way to win it, whether it was by 1, 3, 20, didn't really matter to them. But I always kind of wonder, let's say Atlanta does win that game 34-21, something like that. Does this number open 4.5? Does it open 4? Does it open 3.5? You know, why should that game that was not a good spot for Atlanta dictate what happens with this number?
Well, I think for starters, they'll say, okay, the shorter week, they had to play Monday night, so there's a little shade for that. But I think to what this topic has been about is, yes, that it is based so much on what you just saw. No one's taken into account, Tampa's out of it. Atlanta barely beat Tampa. Well, it's a division game. These guys know each other. Familiarity breeds contempt. So I going on the road and winning in the NFL, I don't care who you are, is not an easy thing to do. So, you know, to a degree, yeah, I think it's an overreaction. It's funny. It's almost like they're forgiving New Orleans for they ended up winning by 11, but it wasn't that close. I mean, it was closer than that. It's like they're forgiving how New Orleans played against the Jets, but they're not forgiving Atlanta for how they played against Tampa. But that was on the road.
Yeah, again, perception and recency bias just means so much here in the NFL market, especially because all eyes are on all of these games, not just because of the big betting handles, but because it's the NFL. I mean, as much as we bitch and complain about the NFL, and, you know, as you mentioned earlier on in the show, the product's not great, and there's obviously the awful injuries that we've seen here lately. For all the complaints that we have about this league, everyone still watches it and bets on it week after week after week. So, you know, that recency bias is just automatically built in here, and you know, it is something that if you're looking for it, you can do a really good job of creating some line value for yourself out there in the marketplace. Brian, let's look at game 109-110 here between the Rams and the Titans. And this is another interesting one to me. Tennessee loses to San Francisco on a last-second kick from Robbie Gould. And kudos to Jimmy Garoppolo for marching down the field to put the 49ers in that position. The Rams blew out the Seahawks, and they basically did it in the first half, really put it in cruise control in the second half. Now they're laying 6.5, 7 here in the Music City.
Well, okay. I say you could say off a big win over Seattle, it'd be a letdown. But, I mean, that was just such a boat race for the Rams. I think you almost even throw it out. The bottom line is I think Tennessee is in uncharted waters, and we're seeing this. The one thing I would say, it seems like there's a home-road dichotomy going on here with Mariota. And I watched this firsthand when he was coaching the Bills. You know, Malarkey's play calling is atrocious. And they've got to run the football. They just seem to put it too much on Mariota's shoulders. And on the road, he hasn't been getting it done. Now they're back home. The weird dynamic for this game, they still got a shot for the winner-take-all scenario with the Jags. But the reality of it is here, Tennessee loses this game. It's still going to come down to week 17 for them. They win that game with the Jags in week 17 with all the tiebreakers and the machinations as we sit there and try to sort it out. Motivation-wise, Tennessee knows they're not toast if they lose this game. That basically if they win the following week, they're going to be in. The Rams, they remain highly motivated, looking to get a first-round bye. And how do we knock this Rams team for anything they've done? This is the one thing that I kind of been saying all year long. Scary that the Rams were winning all these games and Goff has been such a revelation. My thing has always been, watch for the Rams when we get to December, because that's when Wade Phillips is going to make his massive impact. You can say anything you want to about Wade Phillips as a head coach, but you can't poke any holes at this guy as one of the all-time great defensive coordinators in the game. And it's proven out now. This defense is getting better with each passing week, the more they're employing what he wants them to do.
You know, we had Joe Everett from NFL Draft Bible on the show yesterday, and we were talking about the Rams, and one of the things that he's pointed out a couple of times here on the show that really helps out Los Angeles is that when the team is on defense, Sean McVay is over there with Jared Goff, and they're talking about plays, and they're looking at everything else. He just leaves the defense up to Wade Phillips. And how nice of a luxury is that for a young head coach who – you know, knows he specializes on one side of the ball, to have that guy in Wade Phillips who can take care of the defense, and that's been a working formula for the Rams here. And, you know, I mean, there's really no reason it should stop over these last two games.
And I'll throw it even more so that, and it's never, it drives me insane. You'll always hear coaches, when you hear the coach speak, run, stop the run, but you know, offense, defense, and special teams. Nowhere, ever, are special teams taken into account in the wagering line. And to me, it is so misguided and never considered because field position in games determines games almost as much as turnovers do. And the Rams are right near the top of the list. I mean, their special teams have been spectacular this year. So cherry on top of the sundae that nobody even talks about is that their special teams are winning. I mean, they're not just, you know, not getting beat or the special teams are okay. Their special teams have been winning the day all season long.
One last thing I want to ask you about with regards to this game here. I feel like there's been kind of a disconnect between perception and reality with Tennessee this year. They've been favored in 11 of their 14 games. They won't be favored this week. And depending on Jacksonville's situation, we'll see if they're favored in week 17. But you know, this is a team, while they haven't been favored by a whole lot in most of those games, lots of them around 3, 2.5, stuff like that. I really at no point this year have been all that impressed with Tennessee. Am I missing something? Is there something about this team that does stand out?
No. I mean, like I said, I mean, if they're going to be successful, they've got to hammer the ball on the ground. You know, but a lot, they try to have Mariota running around doing stuff, and the reality of it is Corey Davis, you know, was injured a lot, but, you know, the rookie stud wide receiver, he's just kind of been out there. And in the red zone, if he doesn't find Delanie Walker, they're not getting it in the end zone.
All right, I want to touch on this Buffalo-New England game with you. I'm sure you've got some strong takes on this one here. And for the Bills, they haven't made the playoffs since 1999, which is, you know, one of the big storylines here as we go into the final 2 weeks of the season. Doesn't look like this game's going to help them too much because they're anywhere from an 11.5 to a 13-point dog out there in the marketplace. I'm not a Bills fan. I don't root against the Patriots. The game is really not of that much consequence to me unless I have money on it. But I got to say, Bills having this long playoff drought, it'd be really cool for them and for that fan base for this win over New England to be a big part of getting them back to the postseason.
Okay, for this particular game, it would be, you know, such a massive leap of faith to say the Bills go in there and win. But one thing I would say to you is that Brady has owned them forever, but they're more apt to blow Buffalo out in Buffalo. And one of the reasons is Gronkowski grew up 4 miles from New Era Field, and it was like you could lay your mortgage on if there was a prop with Gronkowski score a touchdown for the games in Buffalo. But for whatever reason, the Bills have actually historically played them pretty tough up in Foxborough. They beat them last year with Jacoby Brissett, which I was comical. Oh, you know, they won the week before with Brissett. Patriots don't even need Brady. They're that good. And then the Bills beat them. Like, oh, well, they only had Jacoby Brissett. It's like, well, you can't have it both ways. They shut them out last year. But a lot of these games, they'll create some turnovers, and they're generally interesting football games that are relatively close. To a degree, the Bills season is going to come down to beating Miami in the final week of the season and then needing Jacksonville to beat Tennessee. That is the 90% model for them to get into the playoffs. So they're not done if they don't win this game. Nobody expects them to win this game. They can pull every trick out of the bag, and you get New England in a letdown spot. I double digits in the NFL is a tough thing at this late date. After New England went through what they went through last week, I think you actually have to take a long, hard look at the points here.
Well, and I know you're kind of rooting for the Buffalo side as well, spending a lot of time there in your lifetime.
I am. So full disclosure. I'm not saying they're walking in there winning a game. I'm not about to lay 12, 13 points with New England in this spot. New England needs to win the game, get on with their lives. Two games at Gillette Field and go to the Super Bowl again. Knowing that they're not done, I think that it really comes down to the last game of the year. I don't know. The one thing I'll say is Buffalo's defense fell asleep for a 3 or 4 week stretch in the middle of the season. But remember the quick start they had. This defense does create turnovers. You know, and the other thing, I mean, they are human beings. They are bitter still about what Gronkowski did to Trey White, who by the way, should be a mortal lock to be the defensive rookie of the year in the NFL. I mean, it's been addition by subtraction. Let New England pay $13 million for Stephen Gilmore. And this White kid has been their best defensive player as a rookie. He should be the defensive rookie of the year.
No, that is an interesting angle to consider here. And I didn't mean to imply that you had any kind of hometown bias or anything like that, just to say that you do know this Buffalo team really well. And it helps to have a pulse on a team like that, especially, you know, in a spot like this, given what New England's going through and, you know, what Buffalo has on the line as well. So didn't mean to imply any bias. I apologize if I did that.
No. I deal with that every day. I mean, it's almost like, you know, out here, I'm not allowed to talk about Buffalo. You're not allowed to talk about it, it's like, follow it every day. You know, if you think you're going to have a read on something, I would say to you, if I think they're going to get rolled, believe me, you know, glad to go against them. More often than not, you know, I try to go pace a play and to think of totals, and then, you know, whatever happens with the result. Weather can certainly be an issue at this time of year up in New England. The total aspect of it scares me. I just think it's an inflated number, and there is a love affair with New England, and we know how good they are. But in terms of them needing the game, I think there is a potential for a mini letdown for New England in this spot. And the Bills know this is a free roll for them. I mean, no one's expecting them. So I think they'll play loose in this game.
Well, as I mentioned at the top of the segment, Brian Blessing from Sportsbook Radio. How can people give that a listen, Brian?
AM 1400 KSHP, KSHP.com. And the shows are all live and archived at sportsbookradio.com. And hockey fans, we have a daily hockey show. It's called Vegas Hockey Hotline. Yesterday we had George McPhee on, the general manager of the Golden Knights, and that shows up on sportsbookradio.com. Really interesting comments from McPhee with this team, you know, shocking a lot of people, and the reality of it is it's going to be one of the most polarizing stories in the second half of the season with the unrestricted free agency has and the thought process of, you know, do I keep these guys or do I make the deals? And I think he has to make the deals. You don't let high-end UFAs walk out the door for nothing, but it's a little PR move that's tougher for the GM when you're winning all these games and people are going bananas, but this guy's got a big focus for the future.
No, that's a really excellent point, because if you can get draft picks and build up depth and build up that franchise and system from top to bottom, you know, how do you pass on it? So
you get all whipped up about what's going on now, and they should. Everybody around here should love everything. Tonight, you got the best team in the league against the team that's tied for first in the West against Tampa. It's a great game. Love it. Enjoy every moment of it. At the end of the year, those UFAs, he's going to – and they're already stockpiled with draft picks coming up down the road. This team is in position. This is all bells and whistles right now. But this team is really sitting in a spot where they can become a dominant team for 6, 7, 8 years if he plays these cards right.
Well, make sure that you check that out on Vegas Hockey Hotline, and then you can also follow Brian on Twitter at Brian Blessing. Brian, appreciate your time. Thank you so much for the great insights here today, man. We'll talk to you again soon.
Hey, Adam, Merry Christmas. Happy holidays to everybody. Thank you. A lot of fun.
Yeah, Merry Christmas. Happy holidays to you as well, Brian. There you go. There's Brian Blessing of Sportsbook Radio. Good segment there. Love chatting NFL. Anytime we get to do so here on the show, but he had a lot of good insights there, and good to have a little bit of a hockey guy that we can reach out to as well here. And, you know, that situation with Vegas is certainly very, very interesting, especially with what we talked about last week. You know, in terms of the home ice advantage that they have, you know, it would be very interesting to see what happens with that team if they got into a playoff series, specifically against somebody that, you know, had an easy travel out there to the city, you know, what the crowds would look like there at T-Mobile Arena. I think that dynamic would be really, really fascinating, to say the least. One more guest here for this Tuesday edition of Bang the Book Radio. That is Mr. Philip Rossman-Reich from Orlando Magic Daily. Philip, how's it going today, man?
It's going good. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Appreciate your time here. Sorry, I know it's a busy part of the holiday season for you. Everything so far so good?
Everything is going well so far. I mean, I'm celebrating Hanukkah. I'm celebrating Star Wars. So it's been a fun holiday season so far.
You a Star Wars guy?
Of course, I'm a Star Wars fan. I actually haven't seen Last Jedi yet. I had stuff I had to do. I couldn't get out to the theater, so I'm going to see it tonight. So no spoilers, please.
I gotta say, I mean, honestly, I've never gotten into it, but what I do know is that anybody that is interested in it is like trying to avoid everything that he or she possibly can about the movie. And I don't know. I feel like with all the spoilers that, you know, my wife has seen for Walking Dead or when True Blood was on or whatever else, I don't know how you avoid that stuff.
Yeah, you're very thankful for articles that say spoilers ahead, and you want to click and read all of them, but you just got to have a lot of self-control. I think among Star Wars fans, there's a healthy level of respect. We don't want to ruin the magic for anyone else. We wouldn't want it done to us, so we won't do it to anyone else. And so I think that it all works out in the end. I've successfully avoided any spoilers. I'm going to rewatch Force Awakens this afternoon, and then I'm gonna head to the theater and enjoy the film. I've read enough reviews to kind of get a sense that, okay, this is going to be a little bit different, but I don't have any plot points ruined. So I hopefully I'll enjoy the film.
I kind of what it's like. I kind of wonder what it's like to actually want to go and see a movie. I sort of feel like lately I've just gone to the movies exclusively to get movie theater popcorn and then sat through something that I kind of wanted to see. So hopefully you enjoy that movie here tonight. And you know, I guess we'll talk NBA here. That's something I can actually keep up with as opposed to Star Wars with you. You know, this week obviously pretty unique in the sense that everybody has a scheduled day off on Sunday. A lot of teams, I think, 20 teams have a day off on Monday, while we've got those marquee games that are on Christmas Day. And, of course, that's, you know, all-day coverage on the major networks showing those games. So does this week have a different feel in your mind, Philip?
You know, obviously it has a little bit of a different feel because I think players, you know, sense that it's the holiday season. And yeah, they play over Christmas. You know, the schedule does not stop just because there's a holiday. But, you know, there's definitely a little bit of a different feeling. I mean, I think we talked about this the last time I was on, but players kind of know that Christmas is a milestone in the season. It's obviously the big day when the NBA announces itself nationally on ABC, you know, on the major broadcast networks. Christmas is their day, essentially, to own the sports calendar for a day in the middle of football season. So it's definitely very much a big day, and players sense that. And I think, you know, we're especially with the way the schedule is now, with it being moved up 2 weeks, we're closer and closer to the middle of the season. I cover the Magic. We're at game 31 already, so we're nearing the midpoint of the season already, if it's hard to believe. And so I think teams already are beginning to sense that, okay, Christmas is here. That's when the season kind of officially gets started, or it becomes more serious that, okay, this is who we are as a team. This is what we need to do to get better. And so I think that in addition to kind of taking the deep breath that is having the holiday season, I mean, teams will obviously be doing stuff in the community and everyone has their families to talk to and have the holidays with. But at the same time, it's also it's time to get serious. Now we're getting into the meat of the season, and we either got to save our season or we got to maintain what we've got. And even GMs and general managers and basketball executives will be thinking, how do I make this team better? Now is the time to do it.
Well, before we look specifically at this week, then I guess I'll kind of ask you about this since we're talking about it. As you said, the season started about a week and a half, 2 weeks earlier than it generally does. Usually, as you mentioned, this Christmas time is sort of, you know, all right, time to flip the switch. Let's be the team that we're supposed to be. Do you feel like because we're a little bit more advanced in the season now, you know, that period that a lot of people traditionally think of as kind of a downtime, you know, late January, early February, the time between holidays, you know, while you're looking ahead to the All-Star break and a few days off, do you feel like some of those tweener types of teams may be a little bit more aggressive, either in terms of, you know, trying different lineup combinations or something like that, or on the flip side, you know, maybe selling and getting involved in the trade market a little bit earlier?
Yeah, you know, it's really uncharted territory because, I mean, I've talked to a few people about this, and you know, for a lot of veterans, there's always a rhythm to the season. Like, their bodies kind of know, they've been through the grind so much, their bodies kind of know when it's time to pick up the level of play, or, you know, just like any of us. I mean, we kind of know when it's, you know, what time of year it is and when it's time to kind of go about, you know, picking up the pace or doing something different or, you know, what's going on. And so moving the schedule up 2 weeks, if anything, I think it's had a bigger effect on the veteran team. Some of the veteran teams got out to a slow start. You look at Cleveland, for instance. Cleveland got out to an incredibly slow start, and now, you know, the season's picked back up. You know, we've kind of hit that normal part of the season, and they've reasserted themselves and climbed to the second seed. Toronto's kind of just been – solid throughout. And they've picked up their pace. Houston has picked up their pace. San Antonio has picked up their pace. Even a team like Minnesota, which has a fair amount of young guys, they've started to kind of get their groove and find their groove. And so mainly, you know, I think that teams are looking to see whether they hit that groove, whether they kind of get that pace that they need to get. I think as far as general managers, you know, the calendar doesn't change much for them. The trade deadline comes a little bit earlier this year. They're doing it before the All-Star break this year. So maybe there's a little bit more urgency in front offices because their calendar has completely changed. But I think everyone's really adjusting to this new rhythm of the season.
Well, and you look, too, I mean, a team like Oklahoma City has now won 7 of its last 10. So they're kind of rounding into form a little bit, too, because, as you said, you know, players just sort of have that internal calendar, that internal clock, so to speak, where, you know, the season's not new anymore. You're not tired yet. You've kind of hit your stride. You're figuring out how to play with any new teammates that you do have. So, you know, we do kind of see the cream rise a little bit. And, you know, when we talked with you, I think it was 2 weeks ago, you're kind of looking at Detroit as a team that would fall off. Well, they've lost 7 of 10 and have actually won 3 straight. So they had dropped 7 in a row there. You know, Milwaukee's a team that has kind of gotten it going a little bit, but they've dropped 3 straight now. So, you know, the teams that we kind of highlighted in past segments here sort of playing out the way that we expected them to. We'll hit on a few more of those teams as we go throughout this segment here. But, Philip, one thing I do want to talk about is, you know, as I mentioned, this week is a little bit different. And we've seen the NBA give these players more days off. But with the Christmas Eve break, with the Christmas break where only, you know, 10 of the teams are playing, lots of situations here this week where teams are playing 3 games in 4 nights, 4 and 6. There's even a couple 5 and 7s out there, which I know the league was really trying to limit. I know there's a few on the NHL side as well. But in terms of teams that just completely lack depth for these 3 and 4, 4 and 6, 5 and 7, 5 and 8, 6 and 9 type thing, who are those teams that are just going to get buried when they get, you know, these rough parts in the schedule?
Yeah, I think a team that we have to take a close look at is Indiana. The Indiana Pacers have been one of the nicer stories in the league throughout the season. They've had, obviously, a kind of most improved player run from Victor Oladipo, a team that a lot of people, after trading Paul George, they thought that team would kind of collapse. And I wasn't quite sold on that. I thought they'd be in the playoff hunt. I thought that they might hang around the perimeter because they have some good players in Miles Turner. That, you know, they have a nice system. They have a good culture. And so I thought that they might be able to hang around. But Indiana's bench is a real big problem. I mean, they were playing only eight guys for a good chunk of the season at the beginning when they were playing at a really, really high level. If you go on to the site called hoopstats.com, they keep track of bench scoring, and Indiana has the 21st point differential among bench units. You know, you look at some of the teams that have bad benches, you know, there are a few that are you know, decent teams. But Indiana, I think they're a young team. They're still relatively new. They got out to a faster start than everyone anticipated. And so it always seems natural that there could be that fall. And so their over-reliance on starters could eventually tire them out. Yes, the schedule is more spaced out, but when you hit those rough patches where you do end up playing four and five or 5 and 7 or, you know, 3 and 4, whatever it is, when you do end up playing all those games bunched together or you're playing on a long road trip, that's where you need to rely on your depth. That's where you need depth. And that's something Indiana really doesn't have. They rely very heavily on their starters. You know, another team that doesn't rely very much on its depth is Oklahoma City, actually. I mean, I think everyone talks about their big three in Russell Westbrook, Paul George, and Carmelo Anthony. But not only have some of those guys struggled, but, you know, especially kind of Carmelo Anthony and Paul George fitting in there, not only have those guys struggled, they don't really have much offense outside of them. You know, Steven Adams has been nice for them, but he's not a guy you can dump the ball into and get points. Andre Robertson is not an offensive player at all. Patrick Patterson is still kind of working his way back from injury, but, you know, they don't have much creation outside of their big three. And so they're going to have to rely very, very heavily on their starters. And honestly, that might be one of the reasons why the team has struggled just a little bit. I mean, obviously they're playing much better now and they're back to 500 and back in the playoff race, but they're not meeting expectations with the talent level they have. And I think you've got to look at their bench as a big reason why.
Yeah, I think those are two really good examples, and especially because, you know, you have this Oklahoma City team that picked up a big three and they wanted to rely heavily on those guys. But on the other side with a team like Indiana that started to pick up the pace, you would think that there would be a premium placed on, you know, on establishing some depth there. And especially, you know, with Paul George leaving, you want to get as many people as you can to try and replace that production. So I'm a little bit surprised that's something that they didn't address all that much. Maybe that's something that they're in the trade deadline market for.
Yeah, it might be something that they look for in the trade deadline. It seems like Indiana feels like they're in the playoff race, you know, so it depends what their long-term goals are. I mean, I think that Indiana is a team that they probably feel like they got their core pretty well established with Oladipo and Miles Turner. And so maybe they're looking to add that extra piece. You know, they've got some good players. They got some good players coming off the bench, but really no impact players. So maybe there's someone out there that they really like that they can go after and get. And, you know, maybe that's something I think the trade market is still developing. I think teams are still figuring out whether they're going to be buyers or sellers at the market. There could potentially be some good players for them to go out and get. And you know, depending on what Indiana is willing to give up to make the playoffs this year or to kind of push themselves ahead in the future, you know, maybe that's a direction that they go.
I like that you hit on a couple of teams that are relevant, that are right there in the playoff chase, because you very easily could have gone to teams like Atlanta or Chicago or Orlando, even Charlotte, you know, teams that aren't very good. And the reason being, you know, a lot of times they just don't have depth. Sometimes their frontline guys are pretty decent, but their depth guys, they just, you know, don't have a whole lot to work with in that scenario. Are there any other teams that really do lack depth that, you know, are noticeably going to struggle in those 3 and 4, 4 and 6 type spots?
You know, it probably goes without saying, but Minnesota, they're a team, obviously Tom Thibodeau relies very heavily on his starters and to a point that it annoys fans and everyone's wondering what, you know, he's going to wear these guys out. You know, your Carl Anthony Towns, Andrew Wiggins, Jimmy Butler, Taj Gibson, you know, all these guys play very, very heavy. You know, outside of really Tyus Edney, you know, they don't have a lot of guys that really play a ton of minutes and provide a lot for them. And so, you know, they've obviously played really, really well. I mean, they're sitting in let me pull up my standings here. They're sitting in fourth place in the Western Conference and playing really, really well. But you know, who are they bringing off the bench right now? I mean, you know, Tyus Jones has played well. Jamal Crawford's been okay. I think, you know, maybe people think he's a little bit better than he is. But that's a team that relies very, very heavily on their starters. And so they may go through another lull. They fall down to like fifth or sixth in the West. They'll still be a playoff team, but they rely very, very heavily on their starters. And, you know, God forbid, if someone gets hurt, that's when you're going to really feel the pain of not having a good bench.
I guess the flip side of that coin here is something that we should address rather quickly here is that, you know, obviously Boston has some of the best depth in the NBA, and that's been a thing for Brad Stevens here, and they're remarkably good against the spread and back-to-backs on his watch. But who are some of the other teams that have good depth, maybe some of the teams that you wouldn't expect to be in decent shape in those 3 and 4, 4 and 6 type scenarios?
Yeah, I mean, I think we're seeing it now with Golden State, to be honest. You know, they have surprisingly good depth, and Steve Kerr does such a good job keeping everyone on that roster engaged. He'll change his rotation up to get a guy in who hasn't played in a very long time, playing meaningful minutes. And so they really do trust guy 1 through 13. I mean, JaVale McGee was a key part of the finals last year. He's been mostly out of rotation this year as they play Jordan Bell, as they play some of their other young players. And so right now, Golden State last night in L.A. Was playing without Draymond Green and without Steph Curry. And yeah, the Lakers played them much closer than maybe most would believe. But the Warriors were still the Warriors. They, you know, they still had the devastating run in them. They still found a way to pull out the win. And you know, relying on Kevin Durant, Klay Thompson, Nick Young. You know, Kevin Durant, Klay Thompson, obviously all stars, but being able to rely on a Nick Young to step up, or an Andre Iguodala to step up, or David West to step up. You know, Patrick McCaw is a nice young player. So the Warriors, you can't ever take them lightly so long as, you know, Durant or Thompson are in, but they have guys who scrap and claw and fight and they do not, you know, have the typical, still very hungry team. And they find ways to win even without key guys. And it's easy to say Golden State's really, really good, but yeah, Golden State's really, really good.
So here's something I wanted to talk about with you here today, Philip, is aside from the obvious guys, you know, you got LeBron, Russ, Curry, Durant, Blake Griffin, Chris Paul, James Harden, John Wall, you know, it is a superstar driven league in the NBA, but you know, superstars aren't always out there, whether they have an injury or whether they're sitting, you know, sometimes they're just not going to be in the game. The market adjusts. Everybody knows that. You know, we see significant line moves. We see the books try to get ahead of the action and adjust the numbers. But there are a lot of guys out there that are really solid players that just don't command that level of attention, whether it's in, you know, the mainstream media or in the betting markets. So if I asked you to name a few of those guys, I'm kind of curious, you know, what direction you'd go in where teams would just be, you know, in a little bit of a world of hurt without, you know, some of these players.
Yeah, you know, the guy that I think of most when it comes to you know, if we're going to call MVP, you know, MVP as most valuable player, as a guy that completely changes a team when he's on or off the court, I'm going to go to a team that's struggling a little bit right now in the Charlotte Hornets. Charlotte is 11-19 right now. Their statistical profile suggests they should be a little bit better, so maybe they're due to go on a win streak here soon. But everything on that team revolves around Kemba Walker. When Kemba Walker is on the floor, the Hornets have a +6.3 net rating, which means they outscore their opponents by 6.3 points per 100 possession. That is among the elite of the elite teams. So when Kemba Walker is on the floor, the Charlotte Hornets are a playoff team. I think that that is fairly evident. When Kemba Walker is off the floor, when he's not on the floor, the Hornets are outscored by 16.1 points per 100 possessions. Essentially, when Kemba Walker is off the floor, Charlotte's offense goes in the tank. They only score 90.9 per 100 possession with Walker off the floor. Essentially, that whole team becomes a G League team or a very high lottery team when Walker is off the floor. So there may not be a player in the league right now that has a bigger effect on a team. And obviously, you can't play Kemba Walker 48 minutes per game. That'd be insane. And he's just coming off a shoulder injury too. But he has been really underrated all year. I don't think anyone has really given him nationally the respect that he deserves. He's averaging 21.4 points per game, 6 assists per game. But very clearly, when he is on the floor, he makes that team work. And Charlotte, a team that many thought could be a playoff team this year, I certainly did. I have a lot of respect for what the Charlotte Hornets have built. He is everything for them so far this year. And so he's the player that I point to as the guy that, when he's on the floor, he completely changes the game for his team.
So that's kind of interesting in that, you know, I look at Charlotte and we talked about their home road split, I think, on the last segment that we had you on, and they're just 2-11 away from home this year. And I don't know if Walker has missed, you know, predominantly road games versus home games or something like that, but it is very interesting in that he's such a high usage player, means so much to this team, and every road game presents a unique challenge, whether it's a standalone, a back-to-back, if you're on a road trip, some kind of thing like that. So that, it kind of makes me wonder if that ties into why Charlotte's been so bad on the road, that, you know, it's hard for a guy like Kemba Walker with his usage to be fresh road game after road game after road game.
You know, it's certainly part of it. I mean, I think when you're on the road, you have to rely on your depth a little bit more. And, you know, we were talking about depth. The Hornets are not a deep team. I mean, obviously, you know, when you take out one key player, the whole thing seems to collapse. There's definitely something to that. You know, some of it is just, you know, Walker's had his injuries, and I think that's led to some struggles. Charlotte, even last year, Charlotte was a team that played a lot of close games. You know, the difference in their season when they made the playoffs 2 years ago and when they missed the playoffs last year was their ability to win close games. And Walker is a guy who can execute late in games, but, you know, if you ask me, close games are a toss-up. Good teams don't play close games. They avoid them. So, you know, I think that's part of Charlotte's problem is they don't have the depth to rely on to go out and win on the road. You know, they're a team that does feed off the energy of their home crowd. And, you know, because they rely so heavily on one guy to generate most of their offense or to be part of their offense and spread the floor, that's obviously a huge, huge part of the deal for the Hornets, that when you go on the road, you can't rely on that as much and you know, maybe not rely on the whistle. The Hornets are a team that gets to the foul line a lot, too, as a big part of their offense. It's just something that's difficult for them to translate out on the road. But obviously, you know, Kemba Walker's an all-star. He's been an all-star before. It wouldn't surprise me if he's an all-star again this year. He's a guy that changes games, you know, for that team and is obviously their most valuable player. So, you know, they're going to need a little bit more from him. I don't know if there's much more you can ask for him, but, you know, they're going to need some other guys to step up too.
All right, so again, outside of, you know, that chosen 10 or 12 players or something like that, are there any other guys, you know, in that same breath as Kemba Walker that, you know, just mean so much and don't really get the praise or attention for it?
You know, I'm trying to think of other players that have that same kind of effect. I mean, I've done some work on the Hornets, so it's kind of fresh on my mind. I'll throw out a name for you here.
How about Kyle Lowry?
Throw out a name. Kyle Lowry, that's actually one I was thinking about too. When you look at, I mean, the Raptors obviously have played some really good basketball of late and very quietly played some very good basketball of late. Pulling up his stats, you know, Kyle Lowry, you know, the Raptors have a lot of guys who are playing really, really well right now. The Raptors are plus 8.4 net rating with Kyle Lowry on the floor. With him off the floor, they have a they also have an 8.3 net rating. So he hasn't – so, you know, that team – the thing about the Raptors is, you know, we talk a lot about depth. The Raptors have a surprising amount of depth. I mean, I'm looking at their splits. They have no player right now who has a negative net rating when they're on the court and no player right now that has a negative net rating when they're off the court. So they're just a really balanced team, I think. I mean, they've gotten some great play from rookie OG Anunoby. They're getting great play from DeMar DeRozan. Serge Ibaka has played very well for them. Jonas Valanciunas has had some good minutes for them as well. You know, I'm a big Toronto Raptor fan. I love what they do. I think that, you know, they go very unappreciated. DeMar DeRozan is one of the best kind of low post wings in the style of, you know, what Kobe Bryant did later in his career around the league. Kyle Lowry is a flamethrower, and you know, I think everyone is hungry to see them do better in the playoffs. And honestly, what I appreciate about them is that they're a great regular season team. And you know, I can get into this sidebar another day, but I'm a big fan of the regular season. I'm a big fan of the grind and the story of the everyday season. And I find it such a different challenge. And so, you know, seeing the Raptors playing this well and just causing teams so much problems on a night in, night out basis, I think that deserves a lot of respect. And so I don't think people give Toronto quite the credit that they're due. You know, we talked about the bench. They built a really strong team where they have a lot of really good bench guys and guys that can come in and fill in roles and play at a very high level. I mean, I haven't even mentioned Norman Powell, who, you know, is a very promising young player as well. So Toronto, they just kind of do what they do. They just kind of do what they do. I mean, there's really no other way to explain it.
Well, I think that actually wound up being kind of a happy accident there talking about Toronto, because in the West, everybody talks about the big three, Houston, Golden State, San Antonio. You know, San Antonio now getting Kawhi Leonard back obviously elevates that team to a different level. In the East, you don't hear about Toronto. You hear about Boston. You hear about Cleveland. You know, Toronto's sitting there at 20-8. They've got the highest point differential per game of any team in the Eastern Conference, and nobody talks about them. And the fact that they're as good without Kyle Lowry on the floor, man, it sounds to me like they're just a very underrated team in general.
Yeah, and I think a lot of that comes from kind of playoff perception. I mean, let me break it down this way. I mean, I use a lot of kind of the advanced stats to discuss teams, so I've thrown net rating around a lot, which net rating is the differential between the points per 100 possessions you score and the points allowed per 100 possessions you give up. So it's a pace neutral way to look at points allowed and points scored. So what a lot of people believe is net rating is a better way to evaluate the standings and which teams are actually good or bad than your typical point difference, than your typical kind of raw point differential. But like you said, the Toronto Raptors have the top net rating in the Eastern Conference. In fact, the Golden State Warriors and Houston Rockets are kind of heads and tails above everyone else. Plus 12.2 net rating for the Warriors, plus 11.4 net rating for the Rockets. In third place is the Toronto Raptors at 8.4. So they're outscoring opponents by 8.4 points per 100 possessions. They've got a top 10 offense and a top 10 defense. The Celtics are fourth at 4.8. So they have clearly Toronto has clearly separated themselves, at least in this metric, from the rest of the field in the Eastern Conference. And, you know, they're kind of in that second tier behind Golden State, Houston, and ahead of the rest of the top teams in the league. Whether that's going to hold or not, I don't know. I think what Toronto has as far as perception-wise, they've not played well in the playoffs the last few years. I mean, DeMar DeRozan, Kyle Lowry, they've had a lot of struggles in the playoffs. And for a lot of people, they don't want to believe what Toronto does until they show it in the playoffs. It's going to be with Toronto the whole year is, okay, what are you going to do in April? What are you going to do in May? Are you going to make it to June? Those are the questions that the Toronto Raptors have to face down every time they step on the floor. The regular season, you know, for a lot of these elite teams, is kind of pro forma. You're just kind of getting your spot set for the playoffs. Like I said, Toronto is a very dangerous regular season team. That's not a team you want to have to prepare for with only one day to prepare or on a back-to-back. They have so many weapons. They play a really strong defensive style, and you know, to be frank, with a lot of the fans or casual fans, they're not the most entertaining team in the world. You know, DeMar DeRozan works a lot of long twos. They're just kind of very methodical and workmanlike, and so they don't really excite a lot of people. DeMar DeRozan and Kyle Lowry aren't household names everywhere. So that definitely has a part to do with their outside perception. And so the question for them is always going to be, what are you going to do in the playoffs? Will this carry over to the playoffs, and can you perform and actually win a postseason series?
I want to look at a few specific games here, so maybe we can dive a little bit deeper into some of these teams. And we'll start with one of the games here on Tuesday night. Only three games on the NBA docket. Cleveland and Milwaukee. Cleveland up to a two-point favorite at a lot of shops, 2.5 at Bovada. So public money driving the market here on the Cavaliers, who have already beaten Milwaukee twice this year and did so when they weren't playing particularly well. They won their second game of the season, running away by 19 up there in Milwaukee. Won by 5 at home on November 7th when they were a 4-6 team coming into that game. So that was right about the time that, you know, they started to turn things around a little bit. They were 5-7. Well, then all of a sudden they were 18-7. So, you know, that's kind of when the Cavs started to get things going a little bit. Just a small favorite here on the road. And Philip, that always intrigues me to see the Cavs as a small favorite against somebody, because these are the types of games against that, you know, upstart team with a superstar like Giannis. They show up for games like this. So is this a game that they show up for, you think?
I think it's absolutely a game that they show up for. I mean, Giannis Antetokounmpo, one of the best players in the league. I think he gets up for a game against LeBron James, just like everyone else would. I mean, I think Cleveland is used to it at this point, where they get everyone's best shot. They take everyone's best shot every night they go out on the floor. So it wouldn't surprise me if we get a really entertaining game. This is a game that I have circled on my calendar for tonight as a game to watch. It's obviously got the big names, but these are two of the elite players in the league going up against each other. There's certainly not, you certainly want to keep an eye on this game. You certainly want to watch these two go at it. And so I think that this is definitely a game to keep an eye on and watch. And I think that you know, Milwaukee's going to be up for it. They're playing really well right now. They're kind of riding their ship and making their move a little bit. But obviously Cleveland, they're playing really, really well too.
So as I mentioned, the Cavs were 5-7 at one point, and then they wound up making their way now to 23-8. So they've been on a significant run here. You know, it's what, 18-1 over their last 19 games. Now their schedule gets very interesting. They play this game against Milwaukee, which, you know, again, as evidenced by the line, should be a pretty tough one. Thursday against Chicago, a Bulls team that's not good, but is playing much, much better here of late. I think they've won 6 straight. Then they go to Golden State on Christmas, play Sacramento and Utah, home game on January 2nd. It is their only home game between Thursday's game and then January 15th when Golden State comes to town. So they play home against Portland, at Boston, at Orlando, at Minnesota, at Toronto, at Indiana. They tend to have a lot of problems with Indiana, and that's a look-ahead game to the Golden State game. So Cleveland here, you know, they're playing extremely well. They look like the team everybody expected them to be. They'll get Isaiah Thomas back here probably after the first of the year. But the schedule steps up for them now where they're playing a lot of road games and a lot of pretty good opponents. What do you think about the Cavs long term?
Yeah, I mean, obviously it's Cleveland. It's Cleveland. So you've got to keep an eye on them. They've got the best player in the world in LeBron James. And so as long as they're focused and they're into the game, they are a threat. You know, LeBron James is having another incredible season. The guy does not seem capable of slowing down. And so you have to consider, you have to always be on the lookout for them. It doesn't matter. I mean, they're the kind of team that, yeah, the schedule is toughening up, but they're the kind of team where you don't worry about the schedule because they're that good. They're probably the best team in the Eastern Conference. So I think they're still the favorites to reach the NBA Finals, making it, 9 straight finals for LeBron James. Or 8 straight finals for LeBron James. It's something insane like that. This is a team that you trust to be ready every single night. They're used to taking everyone's best shot. They're used to going into packed environments. I'm sure they're going to be a little bit more hyped for the game against Golden State because it's Golden State. That's another team that's kind of on their level that you can get up for. And I'm sure they'll get picked off here or there, but you know, clearly Cleveland's in a good groove right now. They've kind of found their rhythm to their season. They won't continue this torrid pace that they're on, so maybe this is a part of the schedule where they'll take a few losses and kind of hover at 500 for a few games. But obviously, this is Cleveland. This is LeBron. they know how to take care of their business, and I don't think much is going to change for them.
You know, in the world of sports, where you've got so many incredible stats, DiMaggio's hit streak, you know, you've got Florida State being in a bowl for 35 or 36 straight years. Detroit Red Wings made the playoffs for 25 straight years. How ridiculous is it to make the finals 8 straight times? I mean, that's almost unheard of.
It hasn't been done since the Celtics did it in the 60s. And they won eight straight at the time. I think they made like 8 of 10 finals in the late 50s and 60s. I don't think what LeBron has done in making the finals 8 straight years is getting enough appreciation. I know everyone wants to compare LeBron to Jordan, and everyone's going to say, oh, Jordan went 6-0, and you know, LeBron's lost in the finals a lot. And yeah, whatever. I mean, if that's the argument you want to make for who's the greatest, that's fine. Everyone has their own criteria. But when I talk to people who just seem to be hating on LeBron to hate on LeBron, or I say, look, take a pause here. LeBron James is the best basketball player that we've probably seen since Jordan, at the very least. Sorry, Kobe fans. But what LeBron is doing here, the amount of mental taxation it takes to go through an 82-game season, then play a 2-month-long playoffs, then to play these high-intensity games in the finals, win or lose, to go back the next summer, get better, go through another 82-game season, then another long playoff, then another finals, win or lose, and then do it all again and again and again for 8 years. I mean, I think even Jordan would admit that the third year in his three-peats were always very difficult. I mean, they almost lost to the Jazz. They almost lost to the Suns in the first time that they won their third championship, and then almost lost to the Jazz the second time. They took last-second shots from John Paxson and Michael Jordan to avoid Game 7 on the road. You know, we could be talking about a very different, you know, one shot, really. We're talking about a very different legacy for Michael Jordan, possibly. So it shows how precarious all this is. But to come back year after year after year after year and still win at this incredibly high level, get through this long marathon, I don't think we give it enough appreciation. With the salary cap the way it is, it's harder and harder to keep your team together and to stay relevant at a high level. And LeBron James obviously switched teams in the middle of this current streak. So to be this dominant, to reach the final so many times in such a short, you know, consecutively, I don't think we give it the appreciation that it deserves. We're really watching something that's incredibly special and deserves our praise and recognition.
And I think another thing that you hit on there is that he's gotten better. Like, he may be a better player now than he was 7 or 8 years ago, just because of his feel for the game, of the way that he, you know, is able to manage his body, of the way that he's able to make everybody around him better. He's become more well-rounded of a player pretty much every year. And to do that after those long seasons, the short turnaround as he's gotten older, especially with he had his highest career usage in terms of minutes played, I think, last year ever, minutes per game, something like that, ever. It's ridiculous. It's absolutely unbelievable what this guy is doing. And, I mean, obviously I've had a firsthand look at it being a Clevelander and, of course, you know, hearing all the hype when he was at St. Vincent, St. Mary, and then even before that, before he even got to high school and people started talking about him. So, you know, I've had that front row seat, but, man, it's –
and that's
I,
another, and
I don't
that's
know if we ever see another player like that.
Realized. Yeah, and I think that's another thing people don't appreciate about him either. He's been under national scrutiny since he was 18. I mean, it's been – he was drafted in, what, 2003? It's been – nearly 15 years of just of NBA scrutiny, and probably, you know, nearly 20 years of this guy's going to be the greatest. This guy's the king. I mean, he's been called the king since he was, what, 10 years old, which is insane. And yet he's still a very humble guy. You know, it seems a very humble guy, at least publicly. He gives a lot of himself to his community, which again is another part I don't think people give him enough credit for. And he plays basketball at the highest level. I mean, regardless of where you fall on the GOAT scale as far as LeBron James, I think we can safely say he's one of the 5 best players to ever play basketball, or at least play basketball in the NBA.
He's probably one of the 5 best athletes in any sport ever at this point, given what he's doing, what he's been able to have success with, and just, again, getting better year after year. It's It's absolutely crazy.
Everyone forgets, right. And everyone forgets he won Mr. Ohio Football, if I'm not mistaken.
Man, he made the right decision going with basketball, obviously, and not taking those shots playing football. But he could. There's always been that talk of if he could walk out into the NFL and be a tight end, you know, give him a little bit of time to digest the playbook. If he could go out there and do it, honestly, as crazy as this sounds, and it may just be a pie in the sky type of opinion for me, it wouldn't shock me if he could go out there and at the very least be an average NFL tight end or something like that.
No, it wouldn't surprise me at all.
All right. Well, maybe he'll go the pro wrestling route at the end of his career, sort of follow the Dennis Rodman footsteps of, you know, showing up. There's no WCW for him to go to, though, so I don't know. All right, let's go to Wednesday here and look at a few more of these games. Let's talk about your Orlando Magic. They take on the Chicago Bulls. The Bulls are rolling right now, which, you know, I mean, I imagine there were some people that weren't sure they'd win six games all year, and now they've won six in a row, and they've beaten some pretty good teams in the process. Beat Boston. Utah's had some injury problems, but they're still a solid bunch. One on the road at Milwaukee, knocked off a quality 76ers team. What do they get from Orlando here tomorrow night?
It's going to be interesting to see what they get from Orlando. I think Orlando's playing a little bit better than they have in the past. This is still a very injury-depleted team. It's unclear if Aaron Gordon's going to play. He's out. He missed Sunday's game with a calf strain. Evan Fournier is still out with a sprained ankle, although he was recently upgraded to questionable, so maybe his return is more imminent. Jonathan Isaac just came back from an 18-game absence from a sprained ankle on Sunday. So this is a team that's still hurting and still trying to find their rhythm and find their way to compete consistently every single night, or at least through a whole 48 minutes. It's been rough for this Magic team of late. This is a part of the schedule where we all kind of identified that they needed to pick up some wins, and instead they're dealing with injuries. And this is not a team that has a ton of depth where they could deal with multiple injuries to starters. I mean, three guys who started on opening night are out. Evan Fournier, Aaron Gordon are out, and then Terrence Ross is still out with a sprained MCL and fracture of his tibial plateau. So it's definitely been a rough go for the Magic. They're a team that they can't put it all together the whole time. Mario Hezonja had his big breakout game on Sunday. He's playing a lot better. He looks like he'll be part of the rotation for the time being, even with Gordon and Isaac coming back. But the Magic need to find a little bit more. Kind of more that the Bulls have found, actually. I watched last night's game against Philadelphia. Chicago was down in that game, and then Nikola Mirotic just went on a crazy run. That is a team that fights for everything that they're getting. They scrap really, really hard, and they frustrate teams. I think some teams are probably still taking them a little bit lightly, and they take advantage of that. And so it'll be interesting to see if the Magic can recover. They had a great comeback against Detroit that fell just a little bit short. They've been playing a little bit better on the defensive end. Their offense will still go through long stretches where they just can't score. Their bench is a complete mess. And honestly, I think everyone's turning to Frank Vogel and asking, why aren't you adjusting your rotations to keep a starter in there and keep some consistent offense going? If the Magic can get healthy, if the Magic can get some guys back, maybe that changes the game a little bit for them. But Chicago's playing really, really well right now, and Orlando just frankly isn't.
All right, how about this Miami and Boston game? And as I'm looking here, it's obviously December 19th today. It'll be December 20th tomorrow. That'll be the 11th game in the month of December for Boston. They'll play their 12th on Thursday night against the New York Knicks. So the schedule quite compact here for Boston this month. Miami coming up to town. I sort of looked at this game a little bit on Sunday in my situational betting article and kind of isolated it as maybe a bit of a flat spot for a Boston team that's going to be favored by a pretty healthy amount.
Yeah, it definitely could be, and Boston's coming off a really emotional, draining win last night against Indiana, Monday night against Indiana. If you didn't see the highlights, Boston lost a 19-point lead and had to get a steal with 4 or 5 seconds left and a dunk by Terry Rozier to win the game. Indiana kind of yucked it up at the end. So Boston survived by the skin of their teeth. Miami, I think, is dealing with some injury issues. Obviously, they've been without Hassan Whiteside for a little while. I think Goran Dragic is hurt, is dealing with a nagging injury as well. So there's obviously – Miami's obviously not the team that they were last year in a lot of respects. They're still dangerous, but they've struggled a lot of late. Boston's playing really, really well. So maybe the soft spot in the schedule gets them here a little bit on the road or wherever the game is. It's in Boston, so maybe it doesn't. Boston's been a good team. They've been consistent all year, and like you said, they have a lot of depth. So, you know, maybe if Boston's too heavy of a favorite, you stay away, but this is a game that Boston probably feels like they should win.
All right, one more game I want to hit on with you here for Wednesday night, and that's Portland taking on San Antonio. Portland, the host in this game. San Antonio, as I mentioned a little bit earlier in the show, just getting Kawhi Leonard back, trying to work him back in. I think he's played, what, two games now, and those are the only two games that he's played so far this season. Greg Popovich knows how this thing goes. We all know he's one of the best coaches in the NBA, knows how to manage his team over the 82-game grind. This game specifically I want to talk about, but also, you know, how long do you feel like it takes San Antonio to hit that, you know, championship stride with Kawhi Leonard back?
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see. I mean, San Antonio has still played really well, even as they've worked Kawhi Leonard back in. They're obviously not perfect quite yet, and I think the Spurs are still being very protective of Leonard. I think he's only playing partial games. He's still on a little bit of a minutes restriction. And, you know, you watch him play and he doesn't quite look like Kawhi yet. He's still working his way back into shape. So it's going to take a little while. And again, you trust Craig Popovich to know how to manage his team and bring them up when they're ready and to get them going in the right direction. So obviously it's going to be a continual process for the Spurs and for Kawhi Leonard to get where they need to be. Portland, though, is a really dangerous team. Obviously, they're coming off of a long losing streak, but they're playing really, really well. I think they won 2 of 4 or 3 of 4 on an East Coast road trip. They lost last night in Minnesota. So they seem to have figured themselves out and righted the ship. They've got Jusuf Nurkić back, so they got their kind of defensive anchor back in the lineup. This is a team that's obviously very dangerous with Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum as offensive weapons. This will be their first game back home after that East Coast road trip. So, you know, Portland is a more dangerous team than I think people might give them credit for. This might be an opportunity for them to pick off San Antonio, as San Antonio is still trying to figure things out. I don't know if I've seen if Kawhi is going to play or not. It still seems like it's a day-to-day thing with Kawhi, whether the Spurs decide to rest him or play him. He'll probably play because I think San Antonio played last night. But, you know, it's still obviously a gradual process bringing Kawhi Leonard back in. And while that's still the case, San Antonio is still very good, but it certainly leaves them a little bit vulnerable.
Philip Rostenreich from Orlando Magic Daily. What's going on over there at Orlando Magic Daily right now, Philip?
You know, not much. We're trying to figure out what's wrong with the Magic and just trying to figure out if it's really just the injuries or whether there's something much deeper with the team. We're going to be starting looking at trades as the trade season has opened up. And start, you know, we've written a few draft posts already too, as it seems like the Magic season is slipping away here, nearing the midpoint. But we'll be covering the day-to-day stuff going on with the Orlando Magic. So if you're looking to keep up updated with them, be sure to check out OrlandoMagicDaily.com.
But you can follow Philip on Twitter at @PhilR². Philip, thank you so much for your time, buddy. We really appreciate it. Lots of good stuff today. We'll talk to you again soon. Enjoy all the holidays as well.
Thank you very much. Have a happy holidays to yourself too.
Great stuff there on today's show from Philip Rostenreich of OrlandoMagicDaily.com. You can also find some more national stuff at the Step Back, and he also covers Big Ten college football for Talking 10. Great show here today. I think Brian Blessing and Philip Rostenreich were two very, very strong guests. Lots of good insights and analysis from them. We'll try to keep this Bang the Book radio train going on our Wednesday edition of the show. That'll have Brian Leonard from WagerTalk.com and also Wes Reynolds, who you know from Twitter, at Wes Reynolds, and the number one. Thursday, Brad Powers from BradPowersSports.com, Rolf Michaels, WagerTalk.com. Friday, Westgate Super Contest Selection Segment for Week 16, and Brent from DSI Sportsbook with this week's version of the Odds Report. Over at BangTheBook.com, lots of great stuff for you to check out. Power ratings articles, situational betting articles, game previews for all the bowl games. We are your one-stop shop for sports betting news and information. Also, I mentioned Brent from DSI on Friday's show. You can sign up over at DSI using the promo code BTB and the number 25. Get a $25 free bet just for signing up. 100% deposit match bonus for the sportsbook. 100% deposit match bonus for the live casino as well. That'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody, and I will talk to you again tomorrow.